And whether it's via Sir Richard Branson or Boris Johnson, both performers par excellence, we Australians are being treated to the sorts of passionate, emotive positions on display over Brexit in the UK right now. Richard Branson against it, Boris Johnson for it. And now another big character has entered the fray. Mick Jagger has penned two tracks which capture his confusion about living through these times. Have a listen to the lyrics in England Lost. I went to find England, it wasn't there. I think I lost it down the back of my chair. I think I'm losing my imagination. I'm tired of talking about immigration. Can't get in and you can't get out. I guess that's what we're all about. I went to find England, but I went to find England, but I went to find England, but England's England Lost has just been released along with Gotta Get a Grip, and the accompanying videos are somewhat bracing about life for the modern Brit if you check them out. One of the New York Times prominent writers has chosen another intriguing method of exposing the competing attitudes, what she describes as the disruption of Britain. Katrine Benhold is based in London, and she's compared and contrasted two drivers, a female Pakistani Uber driver versus a South Londoner who's completed the famous knowledge test for the venerable London black cabs, with their history, of course, dating back to 1634. It's immigrant versus native, old versus new, global versus national, she suggests, and it's all on the streets of the capital. I'll let her explain. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you very much.
Now, you focus on two people, Zara Bakali, who drives for Uber, and Paul Walsh, who's a good old London cabbie, but they're really proxy for much bigger issues of the day, aren't they?
Yes, it's just something I noticed after the Brexit vote last year, when every time I took a black cab here in London and started talking about Brexit with the cabbie, who inevitably was a middle-aged white man, he would talk about Uber. And it was pretty clear to me over time that this issue of globalization and automation, the insecurity people felt about their jobs, had a lot to do both with the Brexit vote and was kind of neatly encapsulated in this standoff between black cabs in London and Uber. Now, this standoff, of course, is nothing unique to London. You have it in several cities across the world, that these entrenched taxi companies, former monopolies, often struggling with that competition. But in London, this clash is particularly striking, not just because of the Brexit vote, but because the London cabbies go through this excruciating 4 years of studying and learning by heart the entire map of the city. We're talking about 100,000 landmarks, 25,000 street names. They study on average 4 years. I think there's about a 70% dropout rate. So the knowledge, as it's known, is the toughest taxi exam in the world. And cabbies pride themselves of beating GPS wayfinders every day of the week. But they are concerned that because Uber is a lot cheaper, that they will eventually be priced out of the market.
Well, indeed, you quote both these two people, in effect saying they're both trying to claw their way into the middle class and give their children a shot at a better life. So it's an apple and apple comparison in some ways, in other ways not.
Yes, so this is something that I try to achieve in this story. I try to get away from the kind of partisan divide. Everybody has an opinion about Brexit. Everybody has an opinion about globalization. What I try to do here is find two characters that are easy to have empathy with both of them. And I think it's quite important to point out the similarities. You just read that piece in my story where I point out that both of them want the best for their children, both worry that their children are going to be less well off than themselves. Now, the interesting thing here, of course, is Zara. I mean, her own story is such a striking immigrant tale, you know, of somebody who literally grew up as a girl in a Moroccan village, didn't know how to read and write when she was married away, really, to a Moroccan Londoner, aged 17, arrived in the city and then just made it for herself. She studied English. She loves math, is now taking math classes every week. And she found that Uber, for all its faults, perhaps, in how it treats and maybe pays too little to its employees, gave her that opportunity that too often immigrants feel are difficult to get in societies that are beginning to look more inward and where populism is on the rise. So that is the interesting contrast there.
And in fact, she's really, her life's been completely liberated by it, hasn't she? She's got 5 children, but she's now driving. Her husband wasn't ready to take up driving, and she adores it.
Absolutely. And she now earns more than her husband, who has a part-time job as a supermarket clerk, and she runs her own finances. So it's a story of female liberation in as much as it is an immigrant tale. You're right. Now, of course, female drivers are rare among Uber drivers, as they are among cabbie drivers. But her story is an interesting tale.
She's game. We'd say in Australia she's game as Ned Kelly. It was one of our bushrangers. I don't expect you to understand the allusion, but she's very gutsy. And so is Paul Walsh. I mean, this is the London cabbie who took 3 years to do his knowledge. And as he says, he's part of a history that goes back, in the London cabbie history, to 1634.
Absolutely. That's when the first carriages were sort of parked around the Strand, for those of you who know London a little bit, just by the river on the north bank near the Aldwych. So there were some hackney carriages, as they were known, and people could rent them for hire. And over the years, and over the centuries, really, it became a London institution. Now, until the 60s, the cabbies did not really have any competition whatsoever. Then you started having a minicab trade taking off, but it was always sort of kept at bay in terms of the numbers. So really, the cabbies reigned supreme. And Paul says himself, they were late to wake up to the competition. It was only last fall in 2016 that they regularly, systematically started taking credit cards. Mm. They are extremely expensive, about 30% more expensive on average than an Uber. And certainly if you're talking about an Uber pool, probably 5 times more expensive. Now, they pride themselves of their craft. They do know their way around London and are probably going to get you from A to B faster than a GPS. But they are very expensive and they have suffered as a result.
Well, Paul Walsh has a great line to you. He says, it took me 3 years to get the knowledge and then Uber turned the knowledge into an app. I mean, you could feel his sense, as you say, that this is not just a new business model being discussed. This is like killing a culture. That's how the black cabbies see it.
Absolutely. And of course, it's happened time and time again over the years and the decades and the centuries. You know, we don't have, you know, map makers anymore. I mean, there are tons of professions that prided themselves on their craft and have gone out of business. So in that sense, it's nothing new. But technology today is so disruptive and on such a scale that it's unsettling whole swathes of the population. And the cabbies are just one very sort of striking and obvious example, if you like.
Well, Paul does have this very interesting phrase that he and the other black cabbies, we see them sleep in their cars, he says to you. Uber is turning the clock back to the Victorian era. So it's like a sort of piecework that he's seeing reemerge in his mind.
Yeah, there is a sense of a race to the bottom. And this is something that you find when you talk to the working class in Britain outside of London quite a lot in all sorts of professions. There's a sense that ever since the financial crash of 2008, wages have stagnated. People aren't really improving their living standards anymore. They're probably slipping. And at the same time,
she sleeps in her cab occasionally, doesn't she?
She does, absolutely. No, I mean, she works incredibly long hours on the weekends in particular when she has that freedom because her school, you know, she doesn't have to do any school runs. She does occasionally work literally sort of 30-hour days, you know, going beyond a day, really.
So dare I ask you who your sympathies lie with, because the black cabbies are becoming increasingly restive from your article, and I've seen it elsewhere, and they're staging demonstrations and they're not going quietly, even if they are going. So have you decided what you think?
I think it's pretty clear that if we want to keep vibrant liberal democracies going, we need to take this surge in populism quite seriously. And we need to make sure that our systems and our economic systems deliver for the working class, be that immigrant or be that native. And I think, you know, Uber has to take this message on board. I think the fact that they have increased their commission, you know, from originally taking 20% of already quite low fares from their drivers to now 25%, and when it's an Uber pool, it's up to 35%. They need to listen to their drivers, because people like Zara are not happy either. So in that sense, they share that with the cabbies too. So I think we need to rethink our taxation systems. We need to rethink justice. We need to rethink the sort of moral limits of markets, I suppose, on one level. We need to have proper national debates about these very serious issues that are currently disrupting our countries and our democracy.
Thank you very much indeed for being as creative as you've been in putting these two stories before us to force us to think through some of the dilemmas you've described. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Geraldine. It's a pleasure.
Katrine Benhold, New York Times correspondent based in London, and we'll put a link to her lovely article, really lovely piece of journalism, on Saturday Extra's webpage.